Dreaming of blissful summer days and creamy popsicles? Capture sun-drenched memories with the Orange Vanilla Dream Hydration Multiplier from Liquid IV. Just one stick and 16 ounces of water can help hydrate you better than water alone. Live your summer dream with Liquid IV. Tear, pour, live more. Go to liquidiv.com and get 20% off your first order with code INDULGE20 at checkout.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
It's In This League with Scott Bogman and Chris Welsh.
On the radio.
30. I'm on right now. I don't believe you.
You boys are live.
Is having him lead off, Adley hitting two, and having Gunner hit three. Because the upside of Gunner, or the upside of Holiday is that this is a guy that gets on base. He hits for high contact. He was walking 20% of the time in AAA, had 100 walks in the minors last year. He gets on base. So what do you want from your leadoff hitter? You want a guy that gets on base. Gunner has been struggling a little bit with that, and I think he should be fine. He's a trade four guy for me. Huge hard hit numbers. I think he'd be great hitting three, and then put Santander at four. Oh my gosh, you got this killer top four lineup. That's what I want to see, and I think that's where it is heading. I just don't know if it'll be this year. So I think your expectations have to be tempered, and the trade things are, it's tough with him. So I presented this earlier. I'm going to give you a stat line. You tell me if this is a good, solid Jackson Holiday season, or you'd be like really happy to get this out of Jackson Holiday. So the numbers, 16 homers, 27 stolen bases, 264 average, 77 runs, 67 RBI. Would you be happy? Do you think that would beat expectations or our expectations of Jackson Holiday?
I think the community in general, just based on like what I mentioned earlier with the whole Julio expectations and every recent top prospect hitting, I feel like people would be generally disappointed, but they shouldn't be. If he goes 16 and 27 and hits 260, 265, we should absolutely take that as a rookie. There are so many guys who come up and struggle, the Adels and the Kelnicks and so many names of guys who don't come anywhere close to that. If he's giving me that, I'm going to be pretty damn happy with it. But I still think you could kind of maybe explore selling high, you know, like top 75, top 100 player, like we were mentioning earlier. Like, I don't know that he's likely to meet that in year one. And I'm not a massive prospect evaluator, but just looking at what the profile tells us in year one, just based on the situation as well, I think that it might be prudent to sell, not just for anything, but if you can get a top 100 player, I think I would do it. 16 and 27 would be great. But I'm also not really expecting that either. It's very tricky for me to evaluate with this team because I think he probably plays most of the time, but that's something that I'm going to get caught up on. And maybe I'll be completely off base. I just think there might be the odd day where he's sitting and we won't be happy about that.
I think that's fine. But like, there's a difference between like having one day off a week and having like half of them off. I know they've been doing it with Westberg and Kowser, but I think bringing up Jackson Holiday is also the commitment. I think Kowser is going to be playing more than Austin Hayes. I think you're going to start seeing Westberg play more than Ramon Urias, and it's only a matter of time before those guys go. Do you know who that line I gave? That was a player's line, projected line I gave you. That was ATC projected line on a player. Do you know who that was?
16 and 27 with Cabrian.
Oh, that would be amazing. Cabrian Hayes year. No, Andres Jimenez. That was Andres Jimenez numbers I gave you. And that's been kind of the thing I've been throwing out is I think we're in that catch 22 where I think Andres Jimenez is kind of a cool baseline player to think of and say, if somebody offers you said player for Andres Jimenez, would you do it? If they don't, you know, like that is a baseline I would do. So when you talk about like, I think people are going to overpay. Okay. Then maybe take away the name for a minute so you don't get caught up one way or the other and then be like, would this be a cool trade? Do I feel overwhelmed to get this player for Andres Jimenez? And that's kind of the baseline I'm using because I think there is the possibility that he doesn't live up to some expectations and you hate to leave stuff on the board. But I also am pretty optimistic because his profile specifically, I have more trust in his hitting profile than I have Jackson Chourio's. Jackson Chourio's power I'll take. But I have some pretty big optimism for his hitting profile, plus the Orioles will run. And I think he has a chance to run a lot. So I think 1530, by the way, is pretty close to what Bobby Witt Jr. did in his rookie year. So that's the takes. But it's good to be have some maybe some pessimism. But where does that drive? And that kind of drives the like the hold, buy, or sell. Speaking of, here's another player who has been absolutely red hot, but you have to deal with the ups and downs. Ellie De La Cruz. Ellie De La Cruz is hitting, I think, 290, which is crazy. The homers are up. I think he hit his third homer yesterday, second or third homer, near the tippy top of stolen bases in the league, while also still sporting a 40% strikeout rate. So, buy, sell, rest of season Ellie De La Cruz. What does he look like to you?
I think we're probably looking at 25 to 30 homers, close to 40 steals, and then good counting stats and a bad batting average. I think that, what is he hitting? He's hitting 318 as of right now. I think that's just nuts. It's not going to sustain. The BABIP is 458, so that's obviously going to come back down to earth. He's going to strike out a lot, and I don't think that we need to worry about it so much, because that's just kind of part of the profile. It doesn't affect the fantasy game so much when he's stealing as much as he does with the power. In that lineup, in that ballpark, the counting stats shouldn't be lacking either. I think that he can return like a top 30 or 40 value, but that doesn't mean you can't sell him right now for a first rounder in some cases. Like, I know NFBC leagues, he was going in the second round, but those aren't trade leagues. But then again, he was probably going in like the third or fourth round in a lot of leagues. If you can trade him for a first rounder right now, I'd be doing that every chance you get. If you can trade him for Yordan Alvarez or even Judge or Matt Olson, I would be doing that. I think that he's going to do very well for you, but you can probably still eke out a little bit of value. That batting average is not going to even come close to sticking. I think the power is very good. The speed's very good, but people are in such overreaction mode. They're in hyper reaction mode for everything. And right now, Ellie De La Cruz, I think, is the number three ranked player in fantasy. So
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
I generally come in at least 15 minutes late. I use the side door. After that, I just sort of space out for about an hour.
Space out?
I probably only do about 15 minutes of real, actual work.
Would you
be a good sport and indulge us and just tell us a little more?
Let me tell you something about
In This League.
If you can get back a top 5 or 10 player for him, I would be doing it. But that doesn't mean I think he's going to just suck the rest of the year. I think he's still going to be a top 50 or so player. But if you can get a first rounder back for him, I'd be doing it.
I mean, but if you're saying he's a 25 homer, 40 plus stolen base, that's first rounder. That's the first round. That's a first round aggregated system ranker. If you're stealing 40 plus bases, you're hitting over 20 homers. Presumably, you're probably scoring 80 to 90 runs based off of those numbers. RBI totals could be maybe like a little bit dicey or whatever. It's Corbin Carroll without the batting average. Corbin Carroll stole like 52 bases, I think, and 20 some of the homers. You're in the Corbin Carroll territory, and that's like a first round talent. Who would you rather have rest of season? You got to get out of your brain positional changes. But if this offer's out there, someone tweets you and says, what side do you like of this trade? Ellie De La Cruz or Tyler Glasnow?
Oh, man. Just in a vacuum without factoring in team need or anything, it's probably...
Yeah, well, the guy that's getting Glasnow kind of needs starting pitchers, and okay, he's got a surplus of hitting, and the other guy vice versa.
Yeah, if it's, if it fits your team, I think that that's a fairly even trade. I probably would lean towards Ellie just based on what we've seen with pitchers so far. They're all going down. Glasnow, I know that there's a lot of jokes. Like, Glasnow's going to be the only healthy guy at the end of the year, but there's still a lot of injury risk with Glasnow. I know he was just incredible the other night. There's still a lot of risk there, and I think Ellie, even though there is risk with him, it's not the same kind of risk. Like, he might hit 210. He might not fully pan out, but the risk with Glasnow is that he gets hurt and misses the whole year. If you can get a player like Ellie, even if it's not going to be a first-round player the whole year, a top-three player, I think I would be pretty comfortable doing that.
All right. Ellie or Corey Seager, rest of season?
Oh, man. Probably Corey Seager. I was so far out on Ellie that I don't want to just change my whole perspective based on 10 days. Mainly the reason I was out was because his ADP was like 22. But I think Corey Seager is still so safe. He played three quarters of a season last year and was a first round player. That lineup around him is amazing. Like, you're giving up on speed for batting average, and that's kind of the trade-off. But I think that you could probably find speed a little more than you can batting average these days. Corey Seager could hit 320, and Ellie could hit 100 points lower. And I don't think that stolen base difference necessarily covers that for me.
Yeah, I think this is the worst and best. It's the worst time to try to trade for Ellie. It is the best time to trade away. And they're at a head right now because Ellie is not a 300 hitter.
No.
And he's not the number three overall fantasy player, though we've all kind of presumed the upside. But I also, in the same token, I kind of think he can be a top 25 player by being normal Ellie. It's just, as I've said, like, I think you're going to have like a 0 for 25 week or a 1 for 31 with, you know, 15 strikeouts that are going to come up. And it's just, it's the balance of who he is. But, you know, at the end of the day, like, are improvements happening? You know, the strikeout rate, it's not. He still is doing the same thing. If anything, it's just been worse. Yeah. But they've also been putting him in lower spots of the lineup. But like, are other things changing? Yes, his barrel percentage, 14%. That's good. He's got a plus 240 expected batting average. That's also good. By the way, his strikeout rate has dropped down to 35%. Is his hard hit rate up? Yes, those are good. Those are actually all really good signs that are going to help maintain stuff. So what I'm looking for is for Ellie to kind of come back down to earth a little bit and then buy. Not buying him right now. I actually am a buy on Ellie for this season, but not right now because we're at peaky tippy top where it's unreasonable. He's hitting 300 and the stolen bases and all this. No, we got to get back to where he kind of stinks and he looks to hit in the six or the seven hole or something like that. But I actually do think there are encouraging signs for Ellie. And especially hard hit and barrel numbers for a guy like this, who's one of the fastest in baseball, and the power is so immense, like a 93 average EV right now for a guy that hit one 119 last year. Like, good things are just going to happen. Like, BABIP numbers are going to work in his favor with those hard hit numbers and his speed that he actually can overperform. It's just how aggressively bad will the strikeouts take him down? I just think it'll be spurts. It'll just be ups and downs, and he's going to be kind of inconsistent. I feel like you want to be a buy on Ellie, but I feel like your expectations are holding you back a tiny bit.
I like him a lot. I really do. And it's just the fact of, like what you said, if you're buying him right now, you're paying an exorbitant price. And if you're selling him, it better be for somebody with a first round ADP. And don't look at rankings right now, because rankings are kind of, you know, Shelby Miller's like the third ranked player in fantasy or fourth ranked player. So don't just, I'm still going off mostly of ADP. If you're getting back somebody in the top 12 for Ellie, that's kind of the only reason to be selling him right now. He looks amazing. He truly looks amazing. And that strikeout rate, as much as it is a bit of an eyesore, it shouldn't hold him back so much. I do agree. I think that he can be a top 25 or so player. And I wouldn't be selling him unless you are getting back a surefire first rounder.
Like, I wonder if I would take, there's a part of me, I might take a risk. Like, I wanted to look at here's a rest of season. Let me get the stat line real quick just to see what he's done for the year before I say it. All right. Rest of season. Who do you think has the upper edge in five categories? Ellie De La Cruz or Trey Turner? So runs, RBI, homers, batting average, and stolen bases. Turner right now is hitting 277 with four stolen bases, only three homers or three RBI, zero homers, and five runs. Who do you think has more counting stats, at least three of the five categories, and wins between these two?
I think it's still Trey Turner. I think that he is just so balanced across everything. And I think it's really the batting average that makes the difference for me there. You're talking about probably like a 50 point difference. I don't think that the rest of the stat line is going to be drastically different at all. Actually, they're probably both like roughly 20 to 25 homer guys with potential for maybe more from Ellie. Probably like 90 runs, 85, 90 runs a piece, 70, 75 ribbies. Ellie's going to steal a bit more and Turner's going to have a better batting average. But like, I'm kind of a sucker for those batting average assets. I think I would go with Turner.
I'm going to, for the sake of the game, I'm going to go Ellie. I think Ellie's going to have more stolen bases. I think he'd have more homers. I think Trey Turner will destroy him in batting average. I think they could be aggressively close in the run category, and maybe he just slightly beats him. But like, if you're going to, Ellie's the player that's worth taking a chance. And I think you can move guys like Trey Turner's a weird, again, these are weird ones. Positional same for same don't really make sense, but like, I take Ellie over Lindor for the rest of the season. And I know that's not like, ooh, what a take, but I think I would do that. Oh, would you take Lindor over Ellie rest of the season? Say
Ellie
it.
Was, do it. Ellie was, he was drafted ahead of Lindor a lot. Lindor's been
an NFBC, dog water,
awful. But I think I'm still on Team Lindor. I think maybe it is the Dan Vesper school thoughts invading. Right.
Now be reasonable. No, I think it's good to be reasonable.
I mean, Lindor was 30-30 last year. 30-30. I mean,
yeah, Ellie could be 30-60. No, right. But yeah, anything. But he could also be garbage. He could be in the minor leagues in 2 months, like people say. Like, I don't think that'll ever happen.
I don't think so.
But like I said, the early optimism, counting stats and stuff aside, and even strikeout rate aside, like, for him to show improvements in hard hit and barreling, like, that makes me feel good that, like, oh, he's stabilizing. I've said this before. If Ellie could be a 240 to 250 hitter, he's probably going to be a first rounder. If he can be somewhat consistent into that range, he can be close to a first rounder, if not a second rounder. And, you know, pending your league, like, the advantage in stolen bases you might get over batting average might weigh or something like that. All right, let's move on, though. How about Tyler O'Neill, one of the hottest hitters in baseball so far? Huge walk rate, strikeout rate is down. His hard hit numbers are about in line with where he's been, but he's absolutely barreling the living crap out of the ball, hitting for a better batting average. The homers are there. Really seems like him hitting in Boston is a great space. Though he's hitting fastballs really well, the expected batting average is over 100 points lower. It's been breaking pitches that he's been doing major damage with. Three of his six homers have come off of like slider based pitches. Let me see if I can get the exact number here. Oh, it doesn't show me. Oh, dang. I was hoping because three homers come off of breaking pitches. So my main assumption is going to be that is off of, well, sliders. He's only hitting 167. So it's sweepers. He's destroyed sweepers so far. And they're probably considering split fingers that as well. So buy or sell Tyler O'Neill as a top.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
The snozzberries taste like snozzberries.
I'm freaking out, man.
You are freaking out, man.
Littering and...
Littering and...
In this league.
Break it down.
75 overall player rest of the season.
Oh, easily a buy from that perspective. I think that this is a bit of magic happening here, and it's getting out of St. Louis. St. Louis is just, what the hell happened? Like, they went from such a great organization, or at least it seemed like they were, to this dumpster fire over the course of a couple of years, and part of it was definitely the way that Tyler O'Neill was handled. I know that he struggled, and, you know, after he had that amazing 2021 where he was, you know, on the shortlist for MVP that year, he had a terrible couple seasons with injuries, and I know he and Marmol didn't get along. This is a great fresh start in an amazing ballpark. He's hitting in a good part of a, you know, kind of an underrated lineup, I think. And he could give you 35 home runs and 15 steals again. I think he could hit 260, 270. I think he's pretty easily inside of the top 75. And when you're looking at like player rankers this time of year, which I know I advise against, but I'm just going through the top like 10, 20 players on Yahoo, ESPN, CBS, whatever. Tyler O'Neill is still available in a lot of leagues. Like, most of these guys are 98, 99, 100% rostered. He's 87. So it's like most leagues, you're not going to find him. But there are some leagues out there where Tyler O'Neill is waiver wire fodder. And that's kind of ridiculous. Like, I'm buying him as a top 75 player. If he's sitting on waiver wires, like, just, I don't know what you're doing at this point. Go and grab him.
You know, I think he could be one of those guys. There's always that guy every single year. There's always that guy in April that's like, holy crap, when we look back on it and they disappear. You don't think there's any of that? I mean, Tyler O'Neill we really haven't seen any big seasons as of recent from him. Career 2021 was his monster season, but that was it. That's the outlier of all the seasons, and they've kind of dissipated. I say all of this to say I don't know if he's like a top 50, 75 player overall. I think some of this probably comes down to earth. 24% barrel percentage, probably not something he's going to maintain this year. A 647 expected slug, that's probably not going to maintain. So I think he'll come back down to earth, but I legit think he can be probably a 20, 25 home run guy hitting, you know, in a prominent spot in this Boston lineup where he's in it really seems to be a beneficial place for him to hit.
Yeah.
I just like, there also might be, ironically, I don't think his high right now is enough where you could sell him to make sense. I actually think this is a player that you hold on to for the rest of the season. I wouldn't be trying to move him. I do think he'll stabilize. I don't think he's going to beat that one 2021 season. And that might be what it takes for him to be a top 75, 50 player. Because if he's, you know, 260, 25 homers, I mean, what's his base stealing? He stole... Yeah, that's kind of gone by the wayside. Boston doesn't really steal a whole bunch. It's 10 stolen bases, 25 homers, 80-80. Like that's probably close to like a top 75. That's right around the top 75 player. That's probably reasonable.
One thing I'll know with him is that season where he was a monster was his only full season. It's the only time he's ever played over 100 games. It was 138, but every other year there's been injuries and missing time for one reason or another. So if he's able to play 140 games, I think he could get close to that. Maybe not 35 homers, but 25 to 30 range, maybe.
Yeah, he's never paced. He's never paced really to be quite that. But I get what you're saying. Like 2022 pace, he probably could have been like a 25-ish homer guy. 2023 pace, probably around 20 homers, something like that.
That's fair. One thing I do want to point out, though, is the strikeout rate and walk rates going in the right direction over the last few years. That year where he broke out, he had a 31% K rate, went down to 27, down to 25, and the early returns this year are 22. Don't know if it'll stick that way, but the walk rates have also gone from 7.1 to 10 to 10.5. This year it's at 17. So things are moving in the right direction for him. I think the fresh start in Boston had me buying in a few times in the preseason. And to your point, like you probably can't sell extremely high, but you might be able to still buy him because people might be saying, okay, you know, small sample size, whatever. When I was on here last year, around the same time, we were talking about Matt Chapman as like the second coming. And I thought we were onto something in Toronto and it looked terrible. It looked awful the rest of the season. It could be something like that, but I think, you know, O'Neill's a little bit safer. He steals. I think the batting average is a little bit of a higher floor than Chapman, but this is something where I'm kind of buying into it. I think that 25 and 15 with a decent batting average is probably what we're going to see from him.
I actually dig the idea of buying. I would be poking around on Tyler O'Neill too, because I think like this ballpark, this is a great place for him. It'll be interesting, like I said, when he stabilizes, that's something to watch moving forward, because like, he's got a 90%+ EV against every single pitch. His ground ball rate is 24%. Like, how long is that going to kind of continue? But those, again, it's like, you know, strikeouts are lower. He's walking a little bit more. Ballpark factors seem to be well. He's getting the ball on the ground a lot less. He's barreling higher. Like, these are all really good signs. Maybe people aren't quite caught up to where you could get him outside of a top 100 cost. And I think that would be relatively beneficial. Hey, if you had Jackson Holliday and Andrés Giménez, you go, hey, I've already got Giménez and Holliday. Now trade Giménez to go get a Holliday or O'Neill or something like that. Maybe that would work. Let's talk about some pitching. What the hell is wrong with Luis Castillo and George Kirby in your mind? What has happened? Because I'm baffled. I thought Gilbert would kind of be stinky. He's amazing. Castillo and Kirby both off. I have nonstop talked about the Kirby stuff and the inefficiencies of him throwing stuff in the zone and not fooling anybody. But what's your take on what's wrong with them and your perceived value rest of season on both?
I've just pulled up my preseason rankings. I had Castillo at 4 and Kirby at 7. This has been brutal to watch. I have a ton of shares of both of them, specifically Kirby. I was really bought into Kirby, especially early on in draft season. And I agree with you. He needs to throw more balls outside of the zone. It's amazing. Like if you look at like walk percentage plus, he has one of the best walk rates in the history of baseball. If you're looking literally at 100+ years of data, he's like the third best in terms of walk rate adjusted by era. But that has been to his detriment recently. I saw it against Toronto the other night. People can just wait for their pitch. They know that they're going to get a pitch in the zone eventually because he just doesn't want to walk you. I mean, it was crazy. His first start of the year, he walked 2 batters in the first inning, and I was just like, what the hell? What happened here? What happened to George Kirby?
Oh, it was one of my bets of that day. I was like, oh, under 1.5 walks for Kirby, or maybe it was even under half a walk. Like, this is not what he does. But all of a sudden, it was, and then that has completely messed, it feels like. And again, it's all speculation at this point. Because like his stuff looks good early on and then it tapers down and we're like, oh, his velo's down. But also he's pitching more into innings because you don't have guys. He's not getting outs. So it's like, is the correlation the stuff is worse, or is the correlation that he's so hyper focused on getting stuff in the zone and now guys are hitting him up that he's going deeper into games? And again, like I said, I'm speculating on the weirdness of the walk stuff, but it's like, let's get over it.
I think that the stuff with him, and I'm just going to pull up and see what the 2024 stuff rating is. It's more so like he's never been a massive stuff guy. He's gotten by on the command, but I do think that he needs to walk more batters. Like it sounds really stupid to put it that way, but he needs to throw more balls outside of the zone and get more chases and get more whiffs that way, because eventually people know, and of course when at bat they are going to get a pitch that they like, a pitch that they are going to be able to hit. And so far he hasn't been fooling anybody. I'm still inclined to believe that this is just small sample size with Kirby and we don't need to be overly concerned, but I would like to see him throwing more balls outside of the zone, which is kind of, everybody's been saying it recently, but it's true. If his walk rate was even 5 or 6%, I think he'd be amazing.
So you want to buy Kirby? It sounds like you want to like buy the panic, because three starts is enough for people to like really start panicking. So it sounds like you are a buy-in there. Then what the hell's wrong with Luis Castillo?
And the thing with Kirby too, one of those starts was good. It was two bad ones. The Boston one, he walked two batters and then he was like fine for the next seven.
Eight strikeouts.
Yeah, it was the next two that really have people worried. I'm buying him. I'm buying both of them, honestly. Like if there's any player who's struggling, who you spent a top 3 or 4 round draft pick on that people are trying to sell, like I'm happily buying them at this point, unless there's like something drastically wrong with them. Castillo, I don't really know what the problem is, honestly. Like I have no idea other than just to think that it's just been a couple of bad outings where he just hasn't had his best stuff. Like he's one of the best pitchers in baseball. He is by pretty much everybody's account, everybody's ranking, the smartest people in the industry, the dumbest people, everybody in between has him as a top 5 pitcher. Are we all wrong? Are we all crazy? Probably not. All of the underlying stuff I think is still okay. And I don't want to read too much into 2 starts, 3 starts. I think that he's a buy. And I think that kind of goes for everybody who's struggling inside of the top 50 or 60 ADP right now.
All right. Well, this would be another test there. How about Bobby Miller? Bobby Miller, I talked a little bit about, I turned a Tyler Glasnow conversation at the top of the show into Bobby Miller. So I've already kind of had a lot of the conversation, but I thought he was going to have a bounce back. He didn't have a big bounce back. Talk to me about any concern level whatsoever with Bobby Miller, because he's definitely had flashes, but he's showing more inconsistency through 3 starts than anything else.
All the walks have been atrocious, 12% walk rate. I would say though, and I know it's very small sample size, he has a 5.40 ERA. All of the supporting metrics, the ERA estimators, are actually really good. His xERA is 297, xFIP is 265, his CERA is 305. He's still striking out 36% of batters. It's just a matter of, you know, walking less batters at this point of the season, because his whip has been awful, 146. I don't think there's any real need to be concerned here. Just on a skill level, if you're looking at stuff, he is one of the best pitchers in baseball, I think, already. And it might be a little hyperbolic to say that, but Eno and Nick really talked me in this offseason. I did a show with them in January, and they were both ranking him well ahead of where I had him, and it made me kind of take a second look. He's incredible, and I think this is just like a couple of bad starts. There's nothing really to read much into. Look at the St. Louis start. It was incredible. If they were flipped around and he started off with the Minnesota start or the Chicago start, and then he had the St. Louis one, I don't think we'd be that worried. So I think we're still kind of victims to small sample size here and some overreactions. But if you can get Bobby Miller, if the Bobby Miller drafter in your league is worried, same situation for me. Go out and throw a low ball offer at him.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting too. I'm looking at this. I'm always intrigued by like pitch classifications. And by just looking at Baseball Savant, it essentially tells you, oh, he's not throwing his sinker anymore, because he threw it 19% of the time last year and now it says 6%. But I think also the classification of his four seam and sinker might be molding into each other a little bit more, because last year it said 28% four seam, 19% sinker. This year it says 44% four seam, but his fastball velo is down. So last year.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You want to punch me right now, but you won't.
Why don't you punch me in the face? Punch me in the face!
Hey, Derek, you know what's always good for shoulder pain?
What?
If you lick my...
In this league.
99 on the four seam, 98.8 on the sinker on average. This year, he's 98.3 on his four seam. I wonder if the classification is kind of being messed a little bit, and maybe he's not having much of an identifier between the sinker and the four seam, which,
interesting.
All of this to say, like, maybe that's equating to, because last year, like the qualified sinker got hit a bunch. He only threw it a couple times in a couple at bats, again, according to Baseball Savant, and had 1,000 batting average against. Yeah, you just wonder if, like, he's just getting, with the lack of command, not enough separation between four-seam and fastball for anybody to be fooled. And then, because everything else looks relative, he's like throwing the changeup a tiny bit more and no one's hitting that whatsoever. It's got a under 100 batting average against. I'm inclined to say that he's going to be okay because he's had signs of brilliance. It does just kind of look like a pitcher that's still finding his stuff. So this might be the quintessential buy low type of player. And it sounds like you kind of agree.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Bobby Miller is going to be potentially the best pitcher for the Dodgers this year. I've heard a lot of people say that. I think it could very easily come true.
Here's a lower pitcher to talk about. Jordan Hicks. PZP and I were talking about him on leading off. This is a guy that he was pretty big on. I was pretty dicey and questionable just because, like, you know, this is a starter, throws 102. I've just only seen him inconsistent, I feel like, his entire career. Sure enough, comes in and he's kind of been lights out, really. He's throwing his fastball. Velo is all down so he can command it and go deeper into games where he was throwing, you know, his sinker 100. It's down to 95 right now, but it's a lower batting average against. No whiffs whatsoever. And he has implemented the split finger and the sweeper pretty much predominantly this year, where last year it was just like sweeper and these sinker fastballs. He's now got this split finger in, which has a 46% whiff rate. The sweepers, 39% whiff rate. So it's classic stuff as a starter. Get your fastball, hit your points, set your other pitches up, and let those ring. And that is exactly what's happened. So the question is do you buy Jordan Hicks, or do you think this is going to fall apart as someone who's been, you know, a career reliever who's had command issues a whole bunch? Like, do you think this can maintain?
I don't. It's a tricky situation people are in because I don't know that you'd be able to sell Jordan Hicks and get something that would be worth the, you know, giving up on the potential that maybe he's figured it out. I just look at somebody who's never thrown more than 77 innings. He's always had walk rates well over 10%. It's not something I see translating to 130, 140 plus innings of success at the big league level. And a lot of projection systems have him for 135, 140 innings. I don't think that he's going to get even close to that. First, like, there's another side of this that the Giants are going to have a couple of pitchers coming back. They're going to have Cobb pretty soon, and they're going to have Robbie Ray midseason. A couple people are going to have to leave that rotation. I think the guy that makes sense to head to the pen is the guy who has spent his whole career in the pen. Now, they gave him $11 million a year. They probably would prefer to not have him as a reliever, but I think that that's just who he is. This is the year of the reliever turned starter. There's like 10 different examples. I don't think most of them are going to work out just because of the nature of why they're in the pen in the first place. They don't have the stamina. They don't have the command. I think it's kind of a combination of the things with Hicks. Now, he's looked pretty good so far, but he also hasn't been striking batters out. Like, he hasn't been walking them, only a 4.5% walk rate, which is George Kirbyan, and then an 18% strikeout rate or 19% strikeout rate. So it's a very strange profile to look at right now, but I'm not acquiring Jordan Hicks. I'm not going out of my way to get him. If I can package him up in a trade and get somebody that I'm a little more certain of, I would be doing it.
Yeah, it's interesting because, I mean, they said they want him to be a starter, and obviously Keaton Wynn is going to be the guy that's going to go first of anybody. He's out of the rotation when, like, Robbie Ray returns. But Hicks has been effective. That's the goofy part. Like, he's just not getting hit super hard. The not walk thing, I think, is really critical. Maybe it is a bullpen arm. I don't know. I'm inclined to, in a world where maybe he's been sitting around, he's not a trade four. You can trade out. Maybe that's the way to go. How about this? I don't know if you paid attention to it because we're podcasting. Hunter Brown got his things absolutely jiggled today and lit up. He got lit. 9 earned runs by the Royals obliterated him. Oh, would you rather have Hunter Brown or Jordan Hicks rest of season?
Well, I can kiss that first place ERA in Tout Wars goodbye with that outing. Hunter Brown, I think I'm probably still inclined to take Hunter Brown. Like, he is projectable as like an ace, I think, which maybe I'm overstepping. I've been a huge fan of Hunter Brown, so that's probably not a great one to ask me because I'm probably above consensus on him anyway. I had him as like my 31st starter, 30, 31. I was ahead of the pack on him. It's looking awful, but I think it's a classic buy low, sell high. If you're able to do it, I would happily take Hunter Brown. Yeah, pitching for the Astros, a guy that I don't really see as a risk to lose his job. There's not the command issues that I have with Hicks. I think for me, it's pretty easily Hunter Brown, but I'm very biased towards Hunter Brown.
I'll tell you this, just looking at it real quick, everything was down. His slider was down 4 miles per hour today. His fastball was down 1 mile per hour. And check this out. His fastball was only 38% in the zone, but knuckle curve, splitter, and slider were all 75% or more in the zone. I mean, you ain't fooling anybody if you're throwing those just in the zone. He had one swing and whiff on 18 swings today.
That's awful.
Absolutely horrid start. And I don't know. Yeah. Like when I see like weird commandy things like, oh, it's pretty easy. Hey, buddy, don't throw your knuckle curve 78% in the zone. Get the splitter out of the zone. That's what you want to do. And also you have to command your fastball, which he wasn't doing, 38% in the zone. So those are fixable, but I don't know. Jordan Hicks might be, it's a hitter, pitcher friendly ballpark. I think he's someone that I could hold on to. Maybe shower leagues he's sitting out there, I would take a look at. How about a little Mary F. Kill? Here are your three pitchers. Spencer Turnbull, Cody Bradford, Ronel Blanco. Mary one, you know the rest of the thing.
So Ronel Blanco is getting killed here. He's getting killed pretty easily for me. I think that this is going to fall apart. I saw people spending half of their fab on him. 470. 435. This is something that's, I think, going to blow up. So first of all, we're talking about a 30-year-old career minor leaguer who has started 8 games at the big league level, 9 games. Okay. Sometimes people figure things out, but he has been so incredibly lucky through his first couple of starts. He has stranded 100% of base runners. Welsh, his BABIP is 0.029.
Well, I mean, that happens when you throw like, you know, 15 innings, no hit, is you're going to have a pretty low BABIP and you're going to strand all the runners.
0.029. I mean, I think this is a disaster waiting to happen. He might actually not even be in the rotation once Verlander comes back. That's been talked about. Maybe it's JP France, but I think
Is so gone. France is out. Yeah, absolutely. Blanco, I think, can blow up in his next start, maybe. And because his next start, Verlander, I think today or tomorrow, has like one more rehab and then he'll be back next week. I will guarantee you Blanco is going to keep that rotation spot over France. But long term, like I think the no hit innings that Blanco had, you've created a leash. It's not to say that he'll hold on to it for long term, but he has a little bit of a leash, I think, right now, where I don't think France does. All right. So Blanco, you are all out on Blanco. So now Blanco's going to make a long-term commitment and a short-term commitment between Cody Bradford and Spencer Turnbull.
So I'll take Spencer Turnbull home from the bar tonight. I think that he's doing some good stuff. I think what we're seeing is probably not fully sustainable. I mean, zero ERA through 11 innings, probably not sustainable, but he looks pretty solid. He has been, I mean, in the past, there have been times where I've really liked what he's done. 2020 and 2021, he was hurt and he didn't pitch full seasons, but what he did when he was out there was really good. Last year was just a disaster, but he seems to have found something in Philly. If it wasn't for how much I like the number one name on this list, he might be the guy that I was fully jumping at. I did pick up Turnbull in a couple of leagues this week and start him, and that's looked pretty good so far. But Cody Bradford, for me, is looking incredible. I love what I saw from him yesterday over the last few starts, really. I mean, he led all starting pitchers in whiffs yesterday. I know it was against the Athletics, but every start has looked fantastic. He looks like a different pitcher than he did last season. I didn't watch a lot of Cody Bradford last year. He's mostly a reliever. He started 8 games. I don't think a lot of people watched a lot of him, but the numbers were very, very ugly. He's not a guy who's going to overpower you and strike out, 12 batters in an outing, but I think this, the way that he can mix his pitches, it can be very effective. I expect him to stay in the rotation for an excellent team. Right now, I think it's Cody Bradford clearly at the top, and then Turnbull. I would, if you wanted to pick Turnbull ahead of Bradford, I wouldn't fault you necessarily for it, but I think Bradford is the clear number one for me right now.
Do you think Bradford's a guy that, like, this is a strict hold? Because a lot of these guys, Turnbull hasn't been and probably isn't for right now, but a lot of these guys have, and even Hicks, have this kind of like streamer mentality. Do you think Bradford should be seen in the streamer mentality? Hey, I got to pick him up right now, roll him out for a little bit. But short leash, or do you think Bradford's the type of guy that it's like, no, we got to stomach through for a little bit because this is going to be a breakout year?
I think with all three of these guys, it's still kind of matchup based. If any of them was heading into Coors Field next week, or Cincinnati, or they're facing the Dodgers or Braves, like they're still getting sat. I think in most cases you can be pretty comfortable starting them in like 12 team and deeper leagues. I only play in one 10 team league. It's my home league. I don't know if these guys are necessarily 10 teamers. I think they're 10 team streamers. It really depends on like how your commissioner has it set up. If you have six pitcher slots versus like 10, that really changes the arithmetic. But I think that you kind of have to evaluate on a start-by-start basis at this time of year for these guys, because none of them are superstars. They're going to get blown up from time to time. I think Bradford's next start comes in Houston, so that's probably a sit for me. But if he's still sitting on waiver wires, I'm picking him up. Houston, it didn't seem like you're as worried there.
Playing well, Houston's just not been playing super well, and I mean, I get the what we're talking about here, but I don't know. There's something that I feel like Bradford might be able to kind of continue the command, and that might continue rolling against the Astros team. Let's finish it out then with the final order of trust in the closers: Jason Foley, James MacArthur, Kevin Ginkle. You sound like Knights of the Round Table. What is your order as far as trust in saves moving forward to these guys?
I think it's probably Ginkle and then Foley and then MacArthur. You can speak more to the Ginkle situation as the Diamondbacks guy, but I don't see there being much competition for that role.
Give me the order again. Give me the order.
I would go Ginkle, Foley, and then MacArthur.
And remember, I'm asking you rest of season.
Yeah.
I'm not disagreeing with you, but rest of season's like full up. Because I was thinking about adding, you know, the other closers in here. Griffin Jacks has been interesting. Abner Uribe is one. But there are guys that are clearly going to lose their jobs in the near future. Ginkle's up in question. James MacArthur seems to have a hold. Jason, I feel like those three are the most unique. And maybe I'm forgetting one. Some of the most unique closers. So I just wanted to give that as another preface. This is rest of season. So you said Ginkle, Foley, MacArthur?
Yeah, I think with Ginkle, I don't know. I'm a little bit worried with Seawald, like where the shares that I have him, that when he comes back, he might not even necessarily just have that job. Last year was a good year, but it was definitely a step in the wrong direction for him. The walks went up. The expected numbers were not great. They weren't terrible, but if Ginkle's thriving, then I don't see him necessarily losing that job. Is that crazy? Like you're the guy who watches.
No, I completely agree with you. Ginkle's at the top of this list for me as well, because I think Ginkle can hold on to this job even when Seawald comes back. I Lovello's kind of a pain in the ass, so like he might just put Seawald back into it. But there's an opportunity that Seawald does not get healthy for a long time, and it is Ginkle. I think that can be in there. What if I threw Michael Kopech into this list? That change anything? Do anything for you?
He might go to the top, honestly. Like, there's no competition for him. I mean, maybe there is. Brebbia just got hurt and went on the injured list, and he was another guy that was in conversation there at the back end of the pen. But I think it's probably Kopech.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
It's in this league.
Got what plants crave. It's got electrolytes.
What are electrolytes? Do you even know? It's what they used to make.
In this league.
I'm the smartest guy in the world. Says who?
The IQ test you took in prison. Brought to you by Carl's Jr.
Feels like they might prioritize Kirby Yates if we get to a situation where Leclerc loses the job. And I mean, we're headed there on a one-way ticket. He looks just disgustingly bad. I think it's 5 appearances and 4 of them he's got blown up this year. So I think that that's a situation where if you have room to stash, Kirby Yates might actually end up being pretty good and give you 20 saves this year. The thing that gets me is Leclerc was so good in the postseason. He was like a big, and I know this is probably a sore subject for you, but he was he was a big reason why they had success. And now he's just, and it was funny because in the regular season last year, he was not great. Postseason, really good. Regular season now again, he's not great, but I feel like they'll probably give him a bit of a longer leash just because of the success he had in October for them. But eventually that something has to give. And I think if it does, it would go to Kirby Yates most likely at this point.
Joe Orico on Twitter at JoeOrico99 to catch him over on the Sports Ethos Baseball Fantasy Baseball Podcast. You can check out all his awesome stuff that's going on. Twitter is the best way to always catch everything that they got going on. Joe, thank you so much for hanging out, brother.
Welsh, I will come on as often as you'll have me, brother. It's always great getting to catch up. You've been one of the nicest people to me in this industry over these last 3 years, and proud to call you a friend. It's been a great chance getting to know you here. So appreciate you bringing me on and always chatting up in the DMs and stuff. It's always great, man. Whenever I get a chance to interact with you guys, I'll happily do it. And I just did Dynasty Sports Life with Jesse last week, so I get the whole ITL package rolled into one here. It's always great. Always great time, man.
Well, we love you, brother. Definitely a friend for sure. Thank you guys for all hanging out with us. For Bogman, myself, Joe Rico, make sure to check us out over at InThisLeague.com on the Patreon. If you guys want to check out the rank updates, just want to support, want to be a part of the group, check it out, InThisLeague.com. We appreciate that. Go over to @IsItTheWelsh and @BogmanSports on the Twitters to see what's going on. And of course, check me out over on Fantasy Pros Monday through Friday, 12:30 p.m. Eastern on the YouTube, youtube.com/fantasyprosmlb. If you want to see what I got going on live, articles over there, just everything, you know, go support those. Click it a gajillion times, tell them you love me. You know, standard stuff. That's going to do it. Thanks for hanging out with ITL. We'll be back next week. Peace. Bye-bye.